This is Don Wick with the NEFB Historian Report. We've all seen the news of the recent passing of former President Jimmy Carter. In this edition of the Historian's Report, we're going to turn the reins over to Ken Root, past president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, and a conversation with Rich Hull, also a past president of our organization, with memories of the Carter days and connection to the NEFB. Ken?
Hello, this is Ken Root, and this is an official recording for the National Association of Farm Broadcasters between myself, a longtime member of the organization starting in 1974, and Richard Hull, who is a longer time member of the association. Rich, you were president in what year?
1978.
And what year did you become a farm broadcaster?
Probably, 1967, I believe.
Well, it makes it to where you were seasoned by the time that Jimmy Carter came into office in 1977, January. And I want to talk about NAFB and its reaction, through your words, to this man who was a peanut farmer from Georgia, who wound up in the presidency, and how we as members of NAFB worked with him and, quite frankly, benefited from working with him. So tell me, when did you first meet or know that Jimmy Carter was running for president?
Well, this probably took place in 1975 or 76. I was attending the National Rural Electric Cooperative Convention in New Orleans. And the National Rural Electric Cooperative Convention at that time was probably one of the easiest conventions to cover. All you had to do was tell their director of communications who you wished to visit with, and they brought them to you. You didn't even have to go on the convention floor to record speeches or anything. That was how great that convention was. So a former past president of NAFB, Jack Crowner, and I were sitting in the press room one morning with a couple other people. I think Earl Sargent was there, also a past president of NAFB. And in walks this man, kind of short in stature, carrying an old beat-up briefcase with a bumper sticker on it that said, "Carter for President." And he walked up to us and stuck out his hand and he says, "Hello, I'm Jimmy Carter. I'm running for president." And Ken, I have to be honest with you, I didn't know that he was a past governor of the state of Georgia. I just looked at him kind of nonchalantly and thought, well, this is a guy that's not going to go anywhere. Jack Crowner never would give up on an interview, never would miss an interview. And he got up and he said, "Well, let's get the cameras rolling. Let's interview this man." And so in turn, he and I did TV shows with him, or TV film with him. Did radio broadcast with him. Earl did a radio interview with him. A couple others stepped up. And he never did appear on the floor of the NREC convention. He just stayed in the newsroom. After being there about an hour to an hour and a half, he left. And so...
Where did you call him the next time? Because obviously his profile grew. And Iowa, at the time, was just kind of getting his feet under it on being an early primary. Did he show up in Iowa?
Yes. In fact, it's considered that that election, that caucus in the state of Iowa at that time was what brought the Iowa caucuses on the map that everybody fusses so much over in the modern era, that he won the Iowa caucus and then went on to win New Hampshire and virtually other primary going on at that time. And so fast forward a bit to August of that year. Jimmy Carter had already won all the delegates he could to become president, presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. And he shows up at the Iowa State Fair. And usually candidates will show up at the Iowa State Fair prior to the caucuses. This particular time, he had already basically wrapped up the nomination. I think all was yet to be held was the Democratic Convention, but he showed up at the Iowa State Fair. I was working in Topeka, Kansas at the time at WIBW Radio and Television. I had an unbelievable farm staff. And a young man by the name of Kendall Frazier was my right-hand man at that time. Kendall went on to become head, really, the National Cattlemen's Association after serving many years as their director of communications. And Kendall says to him, he says, "You know, Carter's going to be at the Iowa State Fair, and his agricultural advisor is going to be with him. Ken, I cannot tell you that name. I've tried to research to find out who that individual was, but I do know he was from the South, probably from Georgia." So we take off from Topeka for Des Moines. And he was staying, he and his party were staying at a hotel. I believe it was called the Executive Inn. It was right across from the airport. I had stayed there many times, being a native Iowan and covering events in Iowa for WMT in Cedar Rapids. So I kind of knew my way around and knew how to get into that hotel without having to go through the front desk, because I figured there would be all kinds of security and everything. So Kendall and I, and this is back in the days, Ken, of 16 millimeter film, we walked in the back entrance of that hotel, wound around through the kitchens and things where the restaurants were. And all of a sudden, we were stopped by a man who wouldn't know what we were doing there. And we said, "Well, we were here to hope to do an interview with Jimmy Carter." It turned out that this man was high up in the Carter people. And he says, "Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but you're agriculture guys." He says, why wouldn't you like to interview, again, the gentleman, I can't think of his name." I said, "Sure." So we set up our equipment. In those days, you had to have an immense amount of lights to shoot indoors. And I turned the microphone over to Kendall Frazier and I said, "Kendall, you do the interview." And this was in the days when you had magazines that held 400 feet of 16 millimeter film. So we rolled, and about halfway through the interview, Kendall, I think, realizes he's not going to get much more out of this individual. So he just thanks him and signs off. Well, about that time, the door opens up to this room we were in, and in walks Jimmy Carter. And really, I think he walked in that room because he had a question for the agriculture guy. He was giving a major speech at the Iowa State Fair the next day, Jimmy Carter was. So he came over and introduced himself again to us, not remembering that I'd met him earlier in New Orleans. And we just outright asked him again, would he do an interview with us? He turned us down initially, got his question answered from the man that he came to see. And so I asked him again. I said, "Can we do 2 or 3 minutes with you?" Finally, he said, "Oh, why not?" And I said, "Kendall, you're sitting there with the microphone. Governor, you sit down and visit with him. Camera's rolling." And so we used the rest of that magazine of film with Jimmy Carter. And about that time, his chief of staff walked in for his campaign, wanted to know who we all were and what was going on, that Carter had basically done this interview without any permission from anybody on his staff. And once the introductions were all made, everything settled down a bit, and the event was over. And the chief of staff said to us, he said, "Are you going to the fairgrounds tomorrow to hear the speech?" And I said, "Oh, yes." I said, "We'll be there." And he says, "I'll take care of you." He said, "You just show up and there'll be a place there for you." So, that's when all the network news people showed up. And right there in the middle of all the network people, they had a thing marked out on the stands that this is where WIBW was to be. And so we filmed that whole speech as much as we could. He went quite long, as I recall. So those were kind of some of my contacts with him early on before he became president.
Let me
And
ask
again, at that
you.
time, Ken, I think everybody thought that Gerald Ford was still going to be was going to win that election at that time.
Let me ask you about how you managed to get NAFB members into the Carter White House. I think that many things you're saying will apply to any president if you go about it the right way. And I think you already established you had the drive. You had the guts, you had the credibility. How did you pull off getting us in the White House in 1978?
Well, at that time, the National Agri Marketing Association in the springtime on what was called Agriculture Day, and I believe that was always quite close to the first day of spring, they conducted, this was the first year, and they did it for several years, where they would set up a facility in Washington, very close to the Senate and House buildings, a place where you could gather and representatives and senators would come. And there was an 800 number that farmers could call and talk to a senator or a representative who was on duty. I was on hand for that meeting. Ernie Houdeshell from KGNC in Amarillo. Mark Vail was there from Minnesota. I believe Marvin Vines was there, and a few others. But our job was not really to talk to farmers. Our job was to kind of record these conversations, although they were one-sided, between congressmen and senators with farmers out in rural America, farmers and ranchers out in rural America. When that was all over with, everybody was invited to what was called the Army Navy Club for dinner and refreshments. We went over to that, and Ernie Houdeshell and I were together, and at that time we discussed, wouldn't it be neat if we could have a meeting in the White House and all of us meet President Carter. And so that's where it really started. Before I left Washington that day, I contacted his press corps head. I didn't get very far, really. I was really referred to one of the underlings, happened to be a young lady, and I basically didn't give up with her. I just kept after. I'd call at least once or twice a week. This was in, again, late March. And by golly, along in, I think it was late June or early July, permission came. I was president of NAFB at that time. Permission came for a meeting with President Carter in the White House. And man, I was excited. They also said they were going to put together a day-long activities of speeches, updates on what's going on in the USDA and how it related to what the administration was wanting to do with agriculture at that time. And I was given quite a few guidelines, though, at that time, of things that could be done and couldn't be done. I wasn't told the exact individuals I could invite, but I was told the markets that had to be represented. And that was really the heyday of the big time farm stations across this nation. So it wasn't easy to pick individuals to join us. I think we were limited to about, maybe 14 or 16, maybe it approached 20. I can't remember, Ken. But it was not difficult to do that. And I was friends with most of these people that were farm broadcasters, and was delighted that we all were able to participate in it. So we all arrived in Washington the night before. We had dinner together at a restaurant in D.C., then met at the executive office building for a series of meetings. And I don't recall any of them really being anything too newsworthy. Farm broadcasting at that time, we just kept kind of on top of everything that was happening in the USDA, because I think also in the back of our minds, the excitement was going to be the meeting that was going to take place with President Carter.
Tell me, as you look at this, how that stations were staffed and funded, and you as a person, you're from, you think of Kansas, which some people say is a long way from anywhere. But on the other hand, what I detected and felt in my own station was there was a great deal of pride and budget. If you truly were going after news that would make a difference to your constituents.
Well, I was very fortunate, Ken. I worked for an unbelievable company that believed in farm broadcasting. And the reason why they believed in it, because on the other end was the income that came from our advertisers. And we had a huge travel budget at that time. It was well into six figures. And we basically went everywhere we possibly could. We made an attempt to have one person from my farm department in Washington, D.C. every week. And we alternated. We took turns doing that, so everybody could experience that. During my tenure at WIBW, we never missed being in the lockup room at a crop report that was given out. We just felt we needed to be there. And that's how we gained our audience. That's how we gained the respect of the constituents in Washington. Not bragging, but everybody in my department was on a first name basis with Senator Bob Dole. And I remember those days greatly. It all you had to do was call a certain number, and a lot of times he himself picked up the phone.
No, I know that Dole and Roberts in Glickman were called the Kansas Mafia at one time, with a fourth member who was Dr. Barry Flinchbone from Kansas State University. And the power they had was amazing. But I think one of the things that is most important about farm broadcasters is we have always had credibility. We earned that credibility and we kept that credibility. And I wonder if, with you, for example, when we moved into the troubling times of the Carter administration, how you held it together.
Well, it was difficult. The American agriculture movement spawned out of that period of time. And it was either their organizational meeting. I tried doing some research on this since you and I talked the last time. I still feel like that was the formation meeting of the American agriculture movement that we went to Great Bend, Kansas. It was on a Sunday afternoon. I flew out of Topeka in a private plane. I needed a photographer with me and ended up taking a salesperson for a farm department. Probably never shot a foot of 16 millimeter film in his life, but I wanted to make sure that he was at our sound camera. We didn't really need to move it around a lot, and he did a great job. But we attended that meeting, and I still feel like that was the formation, although their headquarters were located in Colorado, I believe. Sterling kind of comes to mind right now. I don't know if I'm correct on that or not. But I took on a posture, and I had the blessing of my management on this, that I was not going to endorse the American agriculture movement on the air. We would cover it. We would give both sides of the issue. We would get people to talk about it from both sides, and although the other side was sometimes difficult to find, but the first violence that took place with the American agriculture movement happened in Topeka, Kansas. I mentioned Kendall earlier. He and I were on that event where a guard dog was killed with a strikeover wrench. The police were there. There were arrests made. We had the only film of that event. We became very popular, very important suddenly. We were on all of the evening newscast across the state of Kansas. I believe CBS News even picked up the footage that was shot there. We both kind of sat down after that event was all over and said, we're not hard news people, just so to speak. This is kind of out of our category, but we were caught right in the middle of it. And there shortly thereafter, I was driving to work one morning, and you went up this narrow two-lane road up to our radio and TV studios, finding that that narrow road was lined on both sides with tractors. And I got up to the entrance to our radio TV stations, and there was a group of farmers, I would say, and ranchers. I would say they numbered in the neighborhood of 20 to 30, with signs screaming and hollering when they saw me get out of the car. They basically wanted to take over the radio station that morning during our farm broadcast. The guy on duty overnight, he was scared to death. He had already called the police as well as the security people on the grounds where our studios were located. We didn't need them really. They were peaceful. I got some of them inside and talked to them without being on the air yet, and told them that I would talk to two people, and you picked the two people. And they wanted to all be on. They wanted to hear from all of them. But I said, nope, we're just going to allow two of you on. And so they finally got around to picking two people. At that time, our farm broadcasting, our farm programs on WIBW, we had live entertainment. So I basically told the entertainers that morning, take a break, go have a cup of coffee, that we're not going to have any music this morning. And we basically devoted the entire hour and a half of radio broadcast to these two individuals. And they told their story. Again, they ask at the end that I endorse the movement. I refuse to do that. I think we made some friends at that time. I think we got the story out. The next event that took place on that was the Tractorcade, the first Tractorcade. We had made the decision early on that we were going to be a part of that Tractorcade and be a part of it from Kansas all the way to Washington, D.C. And again, my farm department people and myself, we took turns riding the tractors. Ole Reed, our salesperson, he even rode a tractor. I rode one across the state of Ohio with a man from Southwest Kansas. And we had a great time. I learned a lot about rural communities and other areas besides Kansas. Ohio treated us beautifully as we traveled across. I think that the Tractorcade at that time was probably 12 to 15 miles long. And when you hit the boundary line for a state, the state line, the highway patrol would take over and the county police would take over and they'd stay with you till you went into another county. Most of the time, the state police of those states are with you all the time. We got into Washington, D.C., and I think they were hit with a record snowfall. I had already headed back to Kansas, and I think Dan Hoffman from our department was in there at that time when the snow hit. And basically, those striking farmers that were on their tractors, basically dug out Washington, D.C., and allowed them to not miss too much work and get that city back up and running again. But they stayed there throughout that whole winter. And I always made the comment that this will all end when it's time to put corn and soybeans in the ground. Calving season started, and that's pretty much what happened when late April and early May showed up. The events pretty well ended in Washington. But we had somebody from our farm department in Washington through that entire time. We just took turns rotating weeks in and out, staying at the Hotel Washington.
That's an amazing story. I saw it from a perspective very similar, but not in the middle of it like you. There are only a few of us left of the era. And I guess what I'm trying to do here, and you spoke it so well, is to see how active the farm broadcaster can be if they have staff and if they have budgets. The times have changed a lot today. There's nothing that replaces being there and understanding it and making it to where that you can convey that to your audience with great credibility. And you did it. So, Rich Hull, formerly with WIBW Radio and Television, and then a number of entities after that time, thank you very much for talking to us.
As always, Ken, thank you much. Happy New Year.